I would like to introduce our next speaker, and that is Marie Schaub. She was a plaintiff in FFRF, Freedom From Religion Foundation's case, over a Ten Commandment monument in a Pennsylvania public high school that her daughter attended. And she was awarded FFRF's Atheist in a Foxhole Courage Award. She today will be presenting her talk called A Monumental Struggle, and the fellow AHA officers and I have had a pleasant time interacting with her so far, and we're excited for her talk. So please give a warm welcome to Marie.
We good?
Okay.
You can hear me? Okay. Hello, everyone, and thank you for having me here today. As Nicole said, my name is Marie Schaub, and I'm here to share with you my story of how a woman who is only 4 feet and 11 inches tall helped to move a 2,000-pound religious monument. Let's see. Now, obviously, we didn't do it with physical force, as you can probably tell. But let me start out by telling you a little bit about myself. Aside from having an intimidating stature, I'm a wife, mother, and graduate of Penn State University with a BA in applied psychology. I'm also an agnostic atheist, humanist, and secular free thinker, among many other things. My good friends will tell you that I'm very outspoken, a bit feisty, and brutally honest. My family and I live approximately 20 miles north of downtown Pittsburgh in Pennsylvania. It's a fairly conservative area in the Appalachian Mountain region, and some have called it the armpit of the Bible Belt. Where I'm from, there seems to be a church on every other block. Most of the people hold their guns, God, and sports close to their hearts. You do not speak ill of the Steelers or the Penguins, as that is considered blasphemy and may be a punishable offense. We moved to the New Kensington Arnold School District about 8 years ago. My daughter was in 6th grade when she started at the Valley Middle School. It was soon after that I heard about the Freedom From Religion Foundation and their interest in relocating the Ten Commandments monument. I nearly forgot about the monolith that I first saw on their high school's campus years ago as a visitor. While attending a karate competition that my 6-year-old was enrolled in, I remember seeing it in front of the building and thinking to myself, "What the fuck?" But as an outsider, I also remember feeling helpless, like there was nothing I could do about it. It wasn't until my daughter was actually a student in the district that I thought about how she would eventually be encountering that huge religious rock every day. I didn't want her to grow up thinking that favoring one religion over another or no religion at all is okay. And I didn't want her to feel like less of a person because our family wasn't in their special group. It seemed impossible, but I knew that this was a wrong that needed to be made right. This is the 6-foot-tall granite monument of the Ten Commandments that up until now has stood unchallenged and prominently situated in front of Valley High School since the 1950s. Certainly others have walked past this monument over the years and knew it was inappropriate, right? Well, apparently, back in the day, these monuments were donated all over the country by the Fraternal Order of the Eagles, supposedly to promote a movie. In fact, a similar statue was placed at another nearby public school approximately an hour away from where I live in Connellsville. But after seeing the backlash from our objections, it's now easy to tell why no one has come forward sooner. Something's going on. There we go. Okay, yeah. We began this case the summer before my daughter started 7th grade. And just to give you an idea of how long this has taken, she will be graduating next year. I honestly think the district did everything they could to stall this decision in hopes that she would finish with school before the case could be heard on its merits, which was a big possibility. So the rest of 2012 went by with no resolution. Then 2013, 2014, 15, and it wasn't until 2016 that there was talk of relocating the monument. The Connellsville complaint was filed alongside our case in New Kensington. Ultimately, the Decalogue in Connellsville was ruled unconstitutional by the same judge who would ultimately decide my daughter and I didn't have standing. He said it was because we didn't encounter the monument frequently enough, but we didn't let that stop us. After the lower court dismissed our case due to lack of standing, FFRF and I filed with the Third Circuit Court of Appeals. The three panel judges unanimously agreed that I did have standing, although they said my daughter did not, as she was too young to understand what harm was being done. After all, she was only 6 years old when we first saw the monument. When I was growing up, I was shuffled around to 8 different school districts. I think I attended a new school almost every year, probably because my parents were poor. But at every school I went to, it seemed to me that my teachers were always respectful of my parents when it came to the separation of church and state. At no time did I feel pressured to follow any particular religious beliefs at home or in school. I went to church as a kid, but I thought for sure everyone knew we were just pretending. It got a little weird once I got older and found out that some adults have imaginary friends. But once I had kids of my own, I started to see signs of abuse. At first, there were invitations that came home in my child's book bag for vacation Bible study in church. This was in her previous school district as well. Then I noticed kids being led in prayer by their coaches at their high school soccer banquets. One day, my son came home from school in 7th grade and said a minister from a local church was coming into his lunchroom and handing out cards asking the kids to attend a church's sleepover. This is the picture that he took as the minister was handing out these cards. Needless to say, each time one of these incidents occurred, I brought it to the attention of the superintendent, as they usually said they were unaware of these things that were happening. Most of the time, that's all it takes is an email, sometimes a phone call. But these seemingly small problems open the doors to much bigger ones. On a related note, when I was in college, I ended up getting expelled for upsetting one of the women in the office. I went there for a list of courses being offered for the next semester. The internet and Facebook were just becoming popular at that time, and the university was trying to encourage students to get the resources online. But knowing that I was going to print it out anyway, I just said, "Jesus, can I get a printed copy?" She got up from out of the counter and slammed a stack of packets on the desk and said, "Jesus is the Lord and Savior." I casually looked at one of the booklets and calmly said, "He may be yours, but he's not mine." And I walked out of the office. Long story short, I had an attorney write Penn State a letter. They refunded my tuition, and I returned the next year. It was awesome to receive the highest GPA award from a professor who spearheaded that witch hunt. My point is, this isn't my first time with a run-in with a religion causing personal problems for me, and it wasn't the last. When I first contacted FFRF about the monument, I thought for sure my name would get lost on a long list of people who were eager to see the monument relocated. I never expected all of this attention, but I was excited to be part of an important case. I thought FFRF's phones would be ringing off the hook with willing participants. Wrong. After contacting my sister, who also had a child around the same age in the district, we discovered that we were the only ones listed on the letter of complaint. it was the district's choice to make the costly mistake of dragging out this lawsuit for 5 years. Yet many people in my area blame my family for the school's indiscretions. This whole thing could have been avoided if the school would have just followed the law in the first place. But I believe the elected school officials decided to fight an unwinnable case in order to pander to the majority of voters in my community. Once they realized that I did have standing, they knew they were fighting a lost cause, even if they didn't want to admit it. One of the sad parts in all of this is that the people who went to that school didn't realize that their group, for the most part, had been given a privilege that no other religious group had been extended. They actually believe something is being taken from them, simply because they are now being treated as equal. Admittedly, the superintendent himself said that he never even noticed it, and many others have said the same. They ask, "Why does it bother you? If you don't like it, don't look." And to that I say, why does it bother you to have it in an appropriate location? And even after losing $164,000 in legal fees alone, a Fox commentator chastised the district and said that, and I quote, "The district violated the 11th commandment, thou shalt not tuck its tail and run." As if they ever had a chance. The superintendent told the Valley News Dispatch, one of our local papers, that, I quote, "We thought we had a winnable case." Yeah, right. "And we just couldn't afford to fight it anymore," end quote. But once the Connellsville Monument was ruled unconstitutional and moved, it was clear that New Kensington's would be the next to go. The Ten Commandments have seen their fair share of controversy, and there have been many important opinions given by the courts to interpret the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment. But it is interesting to hear that so many people in my community who can't tell the difference between there, and there, or your and your, are suddenly constitutional scholars. The Supreme Court of the United States struck down a law in Kentucky that required public schools to post a copy of the Ten Commandments in every classroom. In their decision, Stone v. Graham, the court wrote, "The preeminent purpose of posting the Ten Commandments on schoolroom walls is plainly religious in nature. The Ten Commandments are undeniably a sacred text in the Jewish and Christian faiths." They went on to say that they serve no secular purpose. The courts haven't always sided with secular citizens when it comes to our government's endorsement of this religious text. A Decalogue resides on the Texas State Capitol in Austin, and in downtown Pittsburgh, there's a plaque depicting the list that is situated at the corner of the courthouse. But throughout history, judges have taken a tough stance when it comes to displaying religion in public schools. In the United States, education is compulsory. Going to school is the law, and in Pennsylvania, you don't have a choice as to which public school you can attend. My daughter was lucky to have parents who share custody and one parent who lives outside of the New Kensington-Arnold district. But unlike a park or courthouse, kids have to go to school on a daily basis. Not only are children required to attend school, they are also a captive audience that is easily influenced. Parents reserve the right to raise their kids with or without religion. It does not belong in a public school. I have a feeling that if this were a satanic or Muslim monument, it would have zero support in my community. One of the first signs indicating that we were not welcome came from the school's administrators themselves. The New Kensington-Arnold School District's superintendent took to Facebook like Trump takes to Twitter. John Pallone posted a big, long status about how the district would defend their religious rock against the evil, out-of-town atheist from Wisconsin. Completely ignoring the fact that at least four members of my family who live in the district were also included in the complaint. The superintendent prior to John Pallone was George Batterson, and he also expressed his religious duty to defend the Ten Commandments as revealed in a private email to his sister. So it is apparent that there's a long history of bigotry at Valley High School in New Kensington, Pennsylvania. Everyone involved in the suit was subjected to what I would consider a necessary invasion of privacy. I had to turn over all of my usernames and passwords to each of my electronic accounts, including all my social media, emails, and texts. Anything remotely related to this case was given to the district in a process called discovery. So be careful what you say online. You never know when it could be used against you in a court of law. After years of continuations and motions, the time came for my daughter to leave the middle school and attend the high school. We had to make a tough choice to pull her out of the district and send her to another school or suffer being treated as a second-class citizen at Valley High School. Once she reached the high school, it would be easy to single her out as I am named in the lawsuit. I felt it was important for me to not proceed anonymously because it just isn't in my nature to keep my mouth shut when it comes to problems such as these. And I'd say that that's one of my biggest weaknesses as well as one of my biggest strengths. So her dad and I chose to send her to the neighboring school in which he lives. And it was a risk to the lawsuit to avoid the situation, but it was better than having my child face an unwelcoming and upsetting statue every day for 4 years of her life. Not only would she deal with its physical presence, she would also be judged by the administrators, teachers, and staff who openly expressed their desire to retain their religious symbol. Many people ask me why it bothers me, and the only things I can compare it to would be a Jewish kid walking into a school every day that displayed a giant swastika, or a person of color attending classes where a Confederate flag is flown. As I've heard similar arguments saying, but how does a flag or a symbol actually hurt someone? This is America. You can be an asshole if you want and post these things on your person or property, but don't expect my tax dollars to support it in any way. Last October, FFRF presented me with the Atheist in Foxhole Award, but honestly, at that time, I did not feel worthy. Speaking out about this issue seemed like an opportunity to perform a civic duty by enlightening people who are prisoned by their own minds. I also advocate a woman's right to choose, a person's right to die, and decriminalizing recreational marijuana. But I'm sure religion negatively impacts those causes too. Now that the shit has hit the fan, I'm starting to second guess my decision to go public, but I don't regret fighting. Apparently, a lot of people are pissed off about something that they've never really paid attention to until now. It's quite interesting to hear people who have sent me death threats and nasty comments over a stone that clearly says, "Thou shalt not kill," and supposedly acts as a moral compass for believers. I've learned many new things about myself from the commenters that I've never known before. This one person said that I'm a prostitute who spent my SSI payments from the government on plastic surgery. Yes, they really said that. Another person said that my daughter was kicked out of school for doing drugs, but I think I remember something about not bearing false witness on their list of commandments. So I'm pretty sure they haven't read them, much like they haven't read the Bible. I'm starting to see why no one has spoken up. The hate mail and threats inundated my inbox almost immediately after the news originally aired. Neighbors of mine found social media and letters to the editor as an outlet to vent. There was a new article or posting complaining about my complaint almost daily. I recall one comment on a news article that said my whole family should be taken into the street and shot. Most people wrote that we should leave the country if we don't like it. Some of the crank mail I've received has been both threatening and laughable at the same time. It's because of these threats that I requested my daughter not be named in the lawsuit, and the judge agreed to allow my child to proceed as Doe 1. It is unfortunate that kids can be so cruel, but I guess I can't expect too much from them, seeing how their parents have stooped so low as to verbally attack my kids. A couple of the people I went to high school with had the audacity to post my address online. My kids have been getting bullied by students at Valley High School, but luckily their barks are bigger than their bites. The gossip and the rumors are out of control, but there's not much we can do about it besides record any serious instances and be extra vigilant. I never thought I'd need my Second Amendment to protect my first. There was never any doubt that we would win this case, and we've known this day was coming for a long time. So we've even taken the steps to move to the next town over. But it seems in small towns like ours, moving to the next town wasn't far enough. The news has been made around the world. I've gotten messages from New Zealand, Scotland, Wales, and more. Now that we've moved, our new neighbors make it easy for us to find our house. All we have to do is look for the cheap cardboard cutouts of the Ten Commandments in their yards. They seem to think that it might somehow bother us that they put these signs up in their yards. But I could really give a shit less what they have on their private property. Just the other day, as I was pulling out of my driveway, someone across the street yelled, "God is alive." But as Michelle Obama once said, when they go low, we go high. And so I've done what I can to de-escalate the tension by avoiding the comments and not feeding the trolls. I've noticed that some people in my circle have spent a lot of time bashing me and my family, telling me that I should spend my time doing better things besides fighting to protect our constitutional rights. They say things like, "Why not take time to feed the homeless or raise money for kids with cancer?" As I can't do more than one thing at a time, people know me will tell you that I do what I can to help out my community in many ways. I've spent numerous hours volunteering and contribute to secular programs regularly. In any event, I respect anyone's right to believe in whatever they want. But if you think my family should burn in hell for all eternity because we disagree, I have to say, screw you too. It amazes me that in 2017, being a non-believer is still taboo. Walking around town now reminds me of the Scarlet Letter. Only instead of my A standing for adultery, it stands for atheist. The media describes me as an atheist mother, as if it's a derogatory statement. But I don't identify as being an atheist in hopes of converting anyone. I stand up to let others like me know that they're not alone. My other goal is to help to change people's perceptions about atheists and show them that you don't have to believe in God to be a good person. As hard as it is, I think it's important to focus on discrediting the belief and not the believer. But I've said it once and I'll say it again. There's just no way of telling someone that they're full of shit. I don't go around with a sign on my back. Well, actually, I guess I do if you've seen my tattoo. But I'm always willing to discuss it if the topic comes up in conversation. You might be surprised at how many people are upset that the school has finally agreed to follow the law. I know I was. It's odd to see conservatives who pride themselves on being strict constitutionalists turn a blind eye when it comes to our government endorsing their personal religion. You can just imagine their outrage if it was a Muslim or Satanist monument. I'm sure you've all heard of the Trump effect. I really do think it's opened the door to the hate to flow more freely, and most of those who suffer from it may also fall under the Dunning-Kruger effect. It's like people who are against secularism are so ignorant of the law that they just don't know they're ignorant. Their religion scares me because they think that they can behave badly and all they have to do is ask for forgiveness from their imaginary friends. One woman wrote, "The Christian in me says to leave it to God, but the bitch in me says, burn her at the stake." Another woman replied, "I have the matches. If this is how these monument supporters practice their peaceful religion, then they're doing it wrong." Even though I've received a lot of backlash from the community, I've also gotten a lot of support. One person tagged me in a post that basically said, "Do not threaten Marie or I will send people to your house to beat you." I didn't even know this guy. Someone else posted something like, "We should blow it up and sell the pieces," to which I had to play good cop, bad cop, and denounce any violence. But I'd like to personally thank everyone who has sent me well wishes and words of encouragement, especially those who have spoken out in support of me. I'd also like to thank the officers of AHA, Nicole, Cassidy, and Shayna, Americans United for the Separation of Church and State, the Anti-Defamation League, the Central Conference of American Rabbis, the Jewish Social Policy Action Network, the SKI Coalition, and the Union for Reform Judaism for joining our case by filing an amicus brief as friends of the court. And of course, none of this would have been possible without the Freedom From Religion Foundation. I've gotten a message or two from people who have said that I need to watch what I say because now I'm somewhat of a representative of the secular movement. And while I may have toned it down a bit, I'll never change who I am. I'm not afraid to blow the whistle, and neither should you. I know it sounds cliche, but if you see something, say something. The longer injustice endures, the harder it is to correct. If you don't know how many times I've heard, "But it's been there for so long." Another common argument was, "But how can one person dictate the rights of the majority?" And if I were to respond to those people, which I don't, I'd say that the United States is a democratic republic, and if the majority ruled, women and people of color would never have been given the right to vote. They don't realize that Christians will be the ones to pave the road towards the Sharia law they're so afraid of by chipping away at the wall of separation. The school has said that they have been thinking about moving the monument for a few months now, but just 2 weeks ago, they finally agreed to move the 60-year-old graven image. I knew this day was coming. There was never any doubt in my mind that we would win this case, but there was no way we could have prepared for it. The media attention and wide coverage has made it impossible to avoid conflict, but I feel now is the time to do as much damage control as possible. I don't need any religious fanatics causing any more problems than they already do. What should have been a joyous celebration after purchasing our second home was overshadowed by the negative news that was released that very same day. The settlement was just signed on February 15th of this year, and the school agreed to move it within 30 days. While I'm looking forward to finally bringing this issue to a close, I know that there may be another round of hate coming our way once it is actually removed. But I hope that people keep in mind that I'm not destroying the damn thing. It's simply being relocated to an appropriate location. It would be helpful if the community tries to turn this into a victory by placing it in a more visible location on private property, but I'm sure the headlines won't. I'm happy to say that this new home will be a Catholic school, and that every time somebody passes by it, they'll be reminded of the importance of separation of church and state. Thank you.
Okay, we have time for about two or three questions.
I just had a statement. In the beginning of your speech, you said something that really angered me, and I probably didn't catch everything you said after that because I was stewing. You said the judge told you that your daughter was only 6 years old, and she was too young to understand the magnitude of the situation. But these same people would pat that 6-year-old on the back if they accepted Jesus Christ into their life, right?
Oh, yeah, that's true. Thank you.
That's all I have to say. Thank you for your courage.
Matt.
Did anybody notice that the Ten Commandments that they had posted there was missing a commandment and had bisected the last commandment into two?
Oh, I'm not sure.
There were 9 and 10 were both don't covet. Don't covet this specifically and don't covet anything else. Now, that's one commandment. The one about graven images, which typically is the third, was removed, no doubt because they like graven images and bowing to them.
Exactly, yeah.
You didn't realize this.
I noticed it, but I'm not sure that they noticed the irony. Thanks for your question.
Can you tell a little bit more about the theory as to why you had to give up all of your social media IDs and passwords for the discovery that you referred to?
I think that that's just something that happens commonplace in just about any court hearing. The electronic footprint that you put down nowadays is so heavily monitored that, I mean, any case that involved any topic at all, if it was discussed in any electronic way during discovery, they're going to ask for that regardless. And it wasn't just our side that had to divulge our passwords and whatnot. The other side had been treated the same way. So whenever they found the superintendent's private emails to his sister supporting the monument, he had to give that up.
All right.
Thank you for your question.
I'm actually going to ask a question. I know I'm supposed to hand it out, but I want to ask one, so I'm going to do it anyways. I think it's really awesome that you not only are standing up for constitutional rights, but you're also a mother who cares about her kids and is doing it for them. So I applaud you for that.
Thank you.
But I just wanted to ask, how has your daughter reacted to the situation?
Oh, okay. Well, at the beginning, it was kind of low-key because she was still just starting out middle school, so the kids really didn't know, anything about the case. But when she got to high school age, and now that they have had the settlement signed, the school that she's in is a rival with Valley High School, so the kids in her school, her current school, have been very supportive of her because naturally, you know how high school rivalries are. So the kids in her school, luckily, have been really supportive, and they're like, yeah, you you get them. I've gotten a lot of friend requests from her friends, but the kids in the Valley Middle School have been indirectly bullying our kids by, just spreading rumors like we're going to burn your house down and things like that. So, of course, they're naturally nervous and stuff, but as a whole, I think once this I'm hoping that it will blow over and, we can get through this with having both of our houses still intact.
We've had a couple of these Ten Commandment cases, and I'm thinking, as a compromise, why not replace the Ten Commandments with that old Harvey and the Moonglow song from 1958, the Ten Commandments of Love? I mean, on the one hand, it's democratic because it was on the top 40 for about several weeks in 1958. That's good. And another thing, it's non-sectarian because you can practice the Ten Commandments of Love regardless of what you believe in.
Okay.
So next time this comes up, how about if we try that as a compromise solution?
All right. Okay, or maybe the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, anything secular would be good with me. But love, yeah, love wins all the way. Thanks for that.
How has this changed the other high schools in the state of Pennsylvania now with monuments out in front of their schools also? Has your case been used now to take those down?
Set precedents?
Yeah.
See, I'm not sure about that because, I mean, the Connellsville monument was decided unconstitutional before our case was heard. So, I mean, as a lay person, I would say, well, they said this monument's unconstitutional, so wouldn't that automatically make our monument unconstitutional? And I'm no attorney, so I really can't answer that question to the full ability, but that is a good question to ask. I'm sure, you know, someone at FFRF or, you know, I know that it didn't affect our monument because I just I texted the attorneys and I'm like, they're unconstitutional, so yay, we're done, right? And they're like, no, it's not that easy. So, I mean, I guess the school is already put on notice, like, hey, you know, we should move this, and I think they did follow suit, but only after the pressure. Thank you.
You quoted one number, how much it, in dollar amount, how much it cost the district?
Yes.
Is that the total sum that was spent? I mean, did the county or the state spend any additional money?
Well, that was attorney's fees. $40,000 of the $164,000 went to FFRF's attorneys, and then the rest went to the local attorney that was in Pittsburgh who handled the case, and that was Mark Schneider, his office in Pittsburgh. All of the money went to attorneys. I didn't receive $1 from this settlement. And people in my community, you know, the constitutional scholars that they are, they assume that I was getting money, but I do want to make that quite clear that my family and I didn't receive $1 from this settlement.
And did either politically or in actuality, did they have to raise taxes or do anything consequential in the community in order to pay for this?
Well, unfortunately, their insurance company decided that they would cover this, and that's the only reason why, you know, this case drug out for so long. The insurance company covered it. Now, whether or not their premium went up or something like that, I'm sure, you know, but yeah, aside from the attorneys on our side and the attorneys on their side, which obviously it's more lucrative for the attorneys to continue, you know, so their attorneys made money and, you know, but it was all covered by the insurance.
Any other questions?
So what gave you the courage to fight this case in the long run? Because I know, did you know at the beginning that it was going to last like 5-6 years?
No, not at all. I mean,
what has kept you going?
I think in the beginning it was a bit of stupidity because there was never any, I never thought that it would be this long or people would care so much or that I would get this much attention because I thought for sure we would put them on notice, you know, like, hey, this is wrong. And they would just be like, you know what? You're right. This is wrong. And we would just move on, right? But it didn't turn out that way. And really, the only issues that I had were in the very beginning whenever we announced that we were going to sue them. And then there was a big, long period of just Marie bantering online about atheism. And then now, just recently, they started coming out of the woodwork again. So the way I get through it is carrying my .38 around the house while I'm doing laundry. And I'm hoping to, you know, I have a Rottweiler. I have, you know, my Second Amendment, my husband, and alarms. And, you know, so that's basically how I've done it. I don't want to act like I'm just some hard ass or anything like that because, really, whenever I'm at home, I'm like, What was that? You know? So, yeah, really, that's kind of how I got through it.
So I guess my question is, after all of, like, the scathing comments you received and after how long it's taken, would you do this again if, you know, something else were to come up?
I would definitely do it again. There's no way that I would just let this slide by, you know. I thought about I might change it a little by not being named in the lawsuit, but I didn't want to put our attorneys in a position where, you know, there goes Marie in her big mouth again, talking about, you know, being an atheist or whatever. So, I mean, there was really no other way to go about doing it other than the way it went. So, yeah, I would do it again in a heartbeat.
Thanks, Marie.
You're welcome. See, I wanted to do it from under here, but they wouldn't let me.
So they want to turn me off?
Yeah.
Yeah, better.